gone over those two characteristics, corporate characteristics, then they're taxed as a corporation, and if they're taxed in the as a corporation, they might as well be organized for state law purposes as a corporation. So, as Mr. Durrell indicated, we're certainly not going to replace corporations. It's simply another entity in the arsenal that the person trying to decide what kind of business entity to establish has. Now, I've briefly reviewed the sectional analysis, and it certainly appears in order, but what I'd like to do is give you, instead of the 13-page or the 17-page or 18-page, I guess, version, I'd like to give you the 2 or 3 minute version. First off, on Article 1, it simply provides that limited liability companies can be organized for any lawful purpose, provided they provide within, comply with any other laws governing the activity they're taking under. Article 2 deals with what do you call your LLC, what names can you use. An LLC or limited liability company must be in the name simply to make sure that nobody mistakes it for some other kind of entity. Also in Article 2, you have your standard provisions regarding you need a registered agent and a registered office, simply similar to what we've got for existing corporations. Article 3 explains how you set up a limited liability company. You set it up by filing articles of organization that are very similar to either articles of incorporation for a state law corporation or a limited partnership certificate that is filed with the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. In that, those articles of articles of organization, you disclose whether you're manager managed or member managed. In other words, do all the members in effect have a an equal vote in the default situation or some other voting situation that you provide in your subsequent agreement? Or is there a manager or group of managers that are running the company? Article 4 simply provides mechanisms for amending those articles. Like the corporation situation, if the members of an LLC elect to amend their articles of organization, they file the changes with Juno to record. Article 5 imposes a number of default provisions, and we keep emphasizing that this is a flexible statute. In other words, what much of this statute is doing is writing the agreement for those people who form an LLC and didn't consider particular important issues. In most cases, members can deviate from these provisions if they agree, usually if they agree in writing. Among those default provisions in Article 5 is you can change the managers with a vote of more than one half of the members. And if there's no managers, then a majority of the members govern the particular actions of the LLC. Article 6 deals with admitting members. And as a default, you need unanimous consent to admit new members. That simply deals with the pre-transferability of interest, and as a default model, make sure that you're going to be classified as a partnership rather than a corporation for tax purposes. It also covers your right to withdraw, and provides that you can withdraw as a matter of default from the LLC based on 30 days notice. It also provides for membership termination based on the death, bankruptcy, or incompetency of a member. And again, that simply goes to tax code regulations dealing with continuity of life. Article 7 deals with agency powers of people associated with the organization. In a non-manager situation, it's like a partnership. Every partner is considered an agent of the organization, the partnership. Likewise, as a default in the non-manager situation, every member is considered an agent of the LLC. However, if you elect manager-managed provisions, then in that case, the managers are the agents, and it's more like a limited partnership where the general partners run things. Same provisions for knowledge and admission. contains the no liability to third parties for LLC debt, simply because you're a member or a manager. And that's important because, like a corporate situation, you're certainly not liable individually because you're a shareholder for the debts of the corporation. However, if you individually do something, just because you do it through a corporation or an LLC doesn't remove any liability. I'm thinking of a situation where Joe and Jane have a trucking company. It's organized as a corporation or as an LLC. Joe goes out and causes an accident with his truck. Joe would be personally liable for any negligence on Joe's part driving that truck because he was the actor. Likewise, the company would probably be liable. However, Jane would not be liable for the actions of Joe simply because they were both owners of a limited liability company. So it's not a total avoidance of responsibility for your own actions. It's simply like a corporate shareholder, you're not liable for someone else's actions. Article 8 covers the contribution of property, money, or services to a limited liability company. And like a partnership, there are no tax consequences to transferring in property to an LLC that's going to be organized for tax purposes like a partnership. Article 9 covers distribution. And again, this is simply a default mechanism. But if no one agrees on how money comes out to the investors in the limited liability company, then the capital investment is returned, followed by an equal division by all members of the limited liability company. Likewise, as a default, if you pull out of a limited liability company, you get the fair value of your limited liability company interest. However, in most cases, the members of the LLC will come to some agreement beforehand and establish some formula for valuing the interest of the withdrawing member. You find that commonly is by sale agreements, either in partnerships or corporations. And in the normal course, that's what people are going to do. Article 10 simply indicates how you take title to property, whether it's in the name of the LLC or otherwise, and protects third parties who are purchasers for value, who provide value, and those people can rely on the record title, whether it's the name of an individual acting as a nominee or an LLC or otherwise. And the committee did provide copies of these provisions to various title companies in town, and received no response except for one title company that referred it to their Oregon office that indicated that the provisions were satisfactory to them and helpful. Subsequent articles also talk about dissolution and winding up the affair, the mechanism for arranging for paying or providing for the creditors, and also allow members to file what's known as articles of dissolution and allow them to advertise for unknown creditors. Because sometimes if a business has been going on for a long time, regardless of how good your accounts payable system is, you really don't know who's out there and who may have a potential claim against the corporation. And this provides for a mechanism for identifying those people and resolving those charges before distributing the assets. In a situation where someone dissolves the LLC, like the corporate setup, the people who receive the money, that is the investors, are potentially liable to creditors to the extent that those beneficiaries, those investors did receive money based on the dissolution. Article 12 simply provides that two LLCs can merge. It makes it easier for two LLCs to merge rather than to dissolve one and then retransfer the assets into another. It simply reduces the transactional costs involved in the merger situation. Article 13 provides for regulation of foreign limited liability companies. In other words, a limited liability company organized under the laws of Wyoming who wanted to come to Alaska like a foreign corporation and do business has to register with the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and appoint an agent and qualify by making sure that their name isn't unduly similar to Alaska names and the like. So it's very similar to the foreign corporation situation. Article 14 simply discusses the right of LLCs to sue and indicates that as a matter of default, again, as in some other provision, either the managers can sue or one half of all the members in a non-managed LLC, manager-managed LLC can decide to bring suit where that's appropriate. Article 15 indicates that the LLC can issue certificates to memorialize or otherwise establish ownership of interest, so that's not obligated. There's no obligation to do so. It provides that the fees to be charged by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development may be set by regulation. It also provides that an LLC must keep certain records at its registered office so the members can have reasonable access to those records. And Article 16 is simply general provisions and definition. And I'm sorry, I neglected to indicate at the front, my name is Bob Manley. I'm an attorney with Hughes Thornton of Gantz, Powell and Brundin in Anchorage. And again, I'm not representing any client. I'm just speaking as a concerned practitioner. I think we need to adopt LLC legislation to keep up with the emerging status of this entity as perhaps an entity of choice in for particular business organizations. And I think it will find particular favor in non-resident alien or investors who will, one, be familiar with the entity because it's in common use in Europe, South America, and even in Asia. And second, it will allow them to obtain the benefits of limited liability and still receive partnership tax treatment. And certainly, if a non-resident alien is evaluating business opportunities in, for example, both Alaska and Wyoming, that may be, the ability to use an LLC may be one thing that's going to influence their decision on where to put their capital. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Manley. Any questions from the committee? Joe Sutton?
I think we've got the information here, so.
Understand.
Mr. Manley, what are the elements of public protection? Normally, when we create legislation, we look to try to perform some public good in the whole thing. And from your rundown of the elements of the bill that's before us, the draft that's before us here, it sounds like it has all of the protective elements for the people who might become members. It provides for the flexibility within the framework for management and for accountability and for liability or levels of liability. In all of these instances, whether it's a corporation or a partnership or a limited liability company, is there a broader public good that we should be looking at here? What kind of public protection is necessary within these various forms?
Well, again, I'm primarily a business lawyer and an estate planning lawyer, and looking at it from the protection to the public. When things go bad, when an investment is successful, when an organization is successful, everyone's happy. It hires more employees. It pays its bills on time. It invests. It provides charitable contributions. So really, that's not the problem that I see happening occasionally. But I think in terms of public protection, perhaps one aspect to consider is what happens when a business goes bad and there's economic failure. Certainly in some of those circumstances, creditors who extended credit are not paid. Now, in the ordinary corporate context, the people are limited to, the creditors are limited to the assets of the corporation in those contexts, absent soliciting guarantees. And certainly the banking community and many of the suppliers aren't remiss or at all embarrassed about asking for personal guarantees. Certainly in the LLC situation, I expect the same thing will happen. So to the extent that we have an existing corporate code, I don't think that there's anything that we need to add to LLCs to otherwise protect creditors and the like. The dissolution provisions provide for priorities on payout, and I believe that they protect those people that might be wronged by LLC in dissolution. Now, in terms of greater public good on the estate planning side, one thing I see a lot of is estate planning for entrepreneurial business people. Their primary asset is their business. When their business is organized as a subchapter S corp, an S corporation, in order to obtain limited liability and a single level of income taxation, those individuals are precluded from using many valuable estate planning devices and forms of trust in order to take full advantage of estate tax savings. So these businessmen have to give the choice, are given the hard choice. Do I want to have limited liability right now, or do I want to end up paying more in the way of estate tax eventually and pass less to my children? So in terms of public good, while this is perhaps a relatively narrow segment, I think that's something that LLCs will accomplish very well. I'm not sure what I'm sorry, I'm groping a little bit. I'm not sure whether I've addressed your question. Is there something else you want me to talk about?
Mr. Manley, I'm groping bigger than you are. Now, we're just trying to understand these things. Again, when someone is not involved in corporate law or business law or something of this nature, and I've never been a partner or an aspect of this, we're trying to measure this. And this is something that apparently somebody came forward with that fits between the partnership and the corporations and has assets and deficits, I presume, at any rate, so that you can have the flexibility of choice. I'm assuming, and maybe you can help me, are these kinds of arrangements, these kinds of new legislation, guidance systems, predicated upon compliance with federal law?
Well, I guess to a certain extent, the tax code is driving the organization or driving the force, because you do want the state law attribute of limited liability at the same time you want the federal tax attribute of individual or single rather than double taxation. So certainly the federal tax law is influencing the arrangements. However, actually, even before we had double taxation at the corporate level, there was an entity known as the Partnership Association, adopted in three or four states in the 1890s, which was remarkably similar. So I think it's both driven by state law concerns and federal law concerns. But the reason that it's important to craft this legislation, and I think it is crafted to do so in future time, when it's important to be taxed as a corporation rather than a partnership. Right now, the preferred regime is partnership, so this flexibility allows shifting back and forth. So it's a state law entity, it's governed by state law, but we're keeping an eye on the feds for tax purposes.
Thank you. My office had a call from a friend of mine who used to work for me, who was interested in a limited liability partnership, which I'm beginning to think may be essentially what we have here.
Actually, I believe a limited liability partnership is a separate entity, and it's my understanding that limited liability partnership legislation is will probably be introduced this session, but it is really a different entity, and actually I think was created by amendment of the general partnership law. But I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Lynn,
who's
been working on this issue.
Mr. Lynn, go ahead, sir.
Yes, a limited liability partnership is kind of a misnomer, I guess, in the name. A limited liability partnership is, in fact, a general partnership that has one difference in it. It protects the innocent partners from the malpractice, so to speak, or negligence of one of the partners who caused the tort, so to speak. In a general partnership is different than, and a LLP is different than what you're talking about here with the LLC, because in an LLP, the partners are liable for all debts and obligations of the partnership, except for the potential claim of negligence by one of the partners. So commercial debts, accounts payable, leases, everything like that still is the liability of each of the limited liability partners. In an LLC, that is not the case. The assets of the corporation are as far as the creditors could go. So that there is a big difference. An LLP is far less protective of the partners than an LLC.
There's a limited number of people who are aware of it yet, I think.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Lynn. We do have one other person on teleconference to testify on this bill, and that's Joe Cucchi. Is that correct pronunciation?
It's Joe Cucchi.
Cucchi. Joe, would be pleased to have your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Joe Cucchi. I'm also an attorney at Cook, Schumann, and Grossquist here in Fairbanks, and I, like the others you've heard from today, are very supportive of House Bill 420. For all of the reasons that my esteemed colleagues in Anchorage as attorneys and accountants have mentioned, but before you think that this is just a bill sponsored and supported by accountants and lawyers, I wanted to tell you that although I am, like them, testifying for myself, I have specifically had clients, and I'm sure they have too, who are Alaskans who have asked me, are limited liability companies, is that form available in Alaska? And unfortunately, I've had to tell them no, that isn't available, and I think it is a real disadvantage and a disservice to particularly small business in Alaska to not have this option. Specifically in the cases that I deal primarily with, I invariably have Alaskans who have family members, be their parents, uncles, brothers, whoever, in lower 48 states or other states who want to participate in a business venture here in Alaska, who are willing to spend their outside capital here, who can't do that and get limited liability that they would like in a corporation form. S corporation status, as one of the speakers in Anchorage identified, you can't have any non-resident or alien members in an S corporation. So that doesn't help those situations. And that's certainly a way to get outside investment often into Alaska to get Alaskans going in business. And I think that's very, very important. Also, another thing that speakers in Anchorage have emphasized and that I would like to reemphasize is, and from your perspective, I think there are very few bills that the legislature will deal with that will help Alaskans deal with the federal government and deal with the IRS. And this bill is one of them. It may be one of your only opportunities to do that. The IRS, amazingly, I think it was probably shocking to the people of the Wyoming drafters of LLC legislation, capitulated on this. And they agreed that it could be taxed as a partnership, and I think that's amazing. And to give Alaskans that opportunity, I think is very important. I see very little difference. I think Representative Hudson, it was you who had asked about the public goods and what was the downside potentially to the public. really there is nothing out there that isn't out there already as far as the public is concerned. We still have businesses, if they want to file bankruptcy or go file bankruptcy, regardless of their corporate form, businesses that may not pay their creditors regardless of their form, this isn't going to change any of that. This is primarily, in my opinion, a vehicle to help businesses gain favorable federal tax attributes. There certainly are other benefits out there, but from my perspective, that's the primary one. And I'm really hopeful that this legislature will pass this bill so that next year when my clients come to me, I can tell them, yes, if you want to be a limited liability company, we can look into that. Let's talk about it and what are the advantages and disadvantages for you in doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. To anyone who's still listening, or perhaps to the chairman, or to the representative who is carrying this legislation, a few questions that come to my mind is whether or not the limited liability company would require disclosure of former bankruptcy proceedings or enforcement actions, or disclosure of any securities disciplinary actions or disciplinary history. The thought being here is that is there anything in this legislation that would that is contained in other types of corporate fixes or corporation types? Does anybody understand what I'm or I'm looking for? Looking again for the public's protection here, and that is some understanding that former bankruptcy proceedings or enforcement actions or other disciplinary securities disciplinary history would not be buried within this bill or would be required in this bill. Can somebody help me on that?
Could I interrupt that, Representative Hudson?
Yes, you may.
There is nothing out there that in any business form that can that requires disclosure, for example, of a back bankruptcy or someone who didn't pay their debt. Being an attorney who represents many small businesses who are trying to collect debts, I often wish there were. Corporations, when they form now, are not required to disclose any prior bankruptcies or any prior securities violations. Now securities violations. If you're a C corporation and you have to meet securities requirements, that's with the federal government. There may be some requirement in securities laws. But as far as bankruptcies and bad debts, if I go out to form a corporation today, the state will not require me to disclose if I file bankruptcy. And limited liability companies are no different in that regard. If I went out and formed a corporation, I wouldn't have to disclose that type of information. It's not required anywhere. In fact, partnership, I don't have to ask the state to form a partnership anyway. So in that respect, a corporation is no different. There's no, in a limited liability company is no different. There's no requirement to disclose a bankruptcy or other bad debt.
All right. Thank you very much. Looking at the securities issues side of this, when is a limited liability company interest considered a security and requiring registration, or is it?
I think that under the appropriate circumstances, a limited liability company interest would be subject to our Alaska Blue Skies law to the same extent and subject to the same exemptions that a partnership interest or a limited partnership interest would be subject to the Blue Skies law. Under some circumstances, certainly partnership interests sold for investment, relying on the efforts of others to make your return, that certainly qualifies as a security for the purposes of the Blue Sky Law, and you'd have to either fall within the exemptions or do the appropriate registration. Now, like a general partnership, if I was to form a general partnership with another person, both to run a garage, for example, we would anticipate relying not on others money turn, but rather we'd be working ourselves. And in that case, I think under a general definition, they would not be securities subject to the security law. So it would be exactly like a partnership or a limited partnership as to whether it would be subject to the Blue Skies law or not.
Thank you. Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob? How difficult would it be to reorganize an existing corporation into an LLC if this would pass?
Well, that's not likely to happen very often, simply because there would usually be significant adverse tax consequences to reorganizing at least a C corporation as a limited liability company, because what you'd have to do is dissolve that entity. And any time you dissolve a corporate entity, that's treated as a taxable event, just as if you sold all the assets of the corporation. So for the most part, except in corporations that really had no gains or losses, if there's a corporation there for tax reasons, it's going to be stuck as a corporation. From a mechanical point of view, it wouldn't be that hard to just dissolve the corporation, take the assets, and contribute them to a new limited liability company. But the tax problems are going to stop most people from doing that.
Yeah, you're getting at my point. And that was really, you know, this legislation is primarily, if I understand it right, geared at new businesses or new ventures or even smaller ventures. But as I understand it more, it's not really smaller ventures, but more or less newer ventures in the state as opposed to existing, correct?
That's correct.
And I guess from my standpoint, Mr. Chairman, if I might follow, it seems to me that this is rather consistent with one of the ambitions of this committee, and that was to try and promote economic development within the state. And I applaud the sponsor and also the group. I know that as I've been visiting with the sponsor, talking about who's been opposed to this bill and how it developed and everything, it's a little bit like stew. You leave it sitting around and age a bit, and it gets better with time. And even with the time that it's been out here, I'm yet to see get one POM or one message in opposition to it yet, and that's kind of rare, especially with a bill that's about 20 pages long. So I credit you with having done a fairly thorough job to begin with, and I'm certain that it's going to get a lot more scrutiny, but you've obviously invested a lot of time and done your homework well.
Either that or he's added too many pages and we can't understand.
Yeah.
Bob, I'll ask you one more time just to kind of, what we're trying to do here obviously is to build a little bit of a record on this bill because in the normal process, bills are not heard by people who do not sit on committees that hear them until they come on the floor of the House and ultimately to the Senate. And so as a consequence, because of something as lengthy as this and as complicated to most of us at any rate, those of us who hear the testimony need to try to understand it and to be able to respond to the questions that may come up from people on the floor. And I guess some of my questions certainly may appear to be rather ridiculous, but I'm trying to figure out the relationship between the formation of a limited liability company and the IRS. And it's my understanding that the IRS pretty much rules on a state-by-state basis. I may be wrong in that instance as far as tax. Would this be something that would be subject to the IRS review and compliance in accordance with the federal tax laws?
Certainly, any time, assuming the bill is passed, any time someone organized a limited liability company, it would be subject to IRS review regarding classification. Like most tax returns you file, the IRS never looks at it. I think the audit rate is only 1 or 2%. At the present time, the committee is working on what's known as a revenue ruling project. And what we plan to do is submit the bill once it gets through at least one committee to the Internal Revenue Service National Rulings Office back in Washington and present them with two or three factual hypotheticals and asked them to rule in a revenue ruling which would bind the IRS as to whether this will be a partnership or a corporation for tax purposes under these various situations. And based on the revenue rulings that have been coming out of the national office, I fully expect that the Internal Revenue Service will rule that provided you maintain only two of the four tax characteristics we've mentioned, it will be tax classified as a partnership, and that will sort of give a safe haven for all the Alaska people who want to form LLCs.
All right, thank you very much. The chair has no further questions. The bill is scheduled to go to
Judiciary.
Where else?
And State Affairs, Mr. Chairman.
And State Affairs. So it has two more committees, and particularly Judiciary, presumably at any rate, where they have at least legal counsel as part of staff. If we've missed something, I think we will have an opportunity to try to catch it up there, certainly before it gets on the floor of the House. We have one member shy of having a quorum, and we can take no action until we have a quorum. We have asked Representative Williams if he would come down from his budget hearing long enough to give us his position on final decision here. But it is the chair's interest, I think, in moving this bill out of this committee as soon as we have a quorum. So if I could ask you folks to just kind of indulge with us here for a few more minutes. And I might have to send, I sent Sue up last time, and Sue's not quite as tough as Linda. So I may send Linda up next.
Come on.
Sue's a little too nice, you see.
Oh. We're taking a little stand. What,
let's just kind of, we're on the record here, but I'd like to know how the committee members that are here feel about the bill. Are you satisfied that we understand it enough, that it's in a form that's a good public policy to adopt? Representative Sitton, how do you feel about it, sir?
I'm comfortable with passing it to the next committee, Mr. Chairman. I think so, yes.
Okay. Representative Mulder?
I'm certainly comfortable passing it on. It's always a leap of faith whenever you move a bill that is 20 pages long onto it, you know, without fully understanding every line and every paragraph. But the explanation that was provided was thorough, and generally speaking, there are groups out there that if there is a problem, they jump up and down and alert you to it. And I thought your questions pertaining, is my perception, the only two groups that could potentially be adversely affected is somehow the public good, and I felt that you asked those questions, they were adequately answered. And the other entity that would be objectionable at all would be the IRS, as they're going to lose some revenue off of this if, should we pass it. And to that extent, if we can keep more money in Alaska, so be it.
That's right. I do know what you're doing, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you very much. Representative Williams, we've, I think, probably documented all of the elements of this bill as to the extent that this committee can review it. It goes on to Judiciary and then State Affairs and ultimately before the full body on both sides. Do you feel comfortable with passing it on to the next committee? Representative Williams?
Yes, sir.
All right, the chair would entertain a motion. Representative Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, I would move HB 420, sponsor substitute for HB 420.
Let's adopt the sponsor substitute first.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we would adopt sponsor substitute for HB 420 in lieu of the original bill.
Any objections? So adopted.
Mr. Chairman, with that, I would move sponsor substitute for HB 420 and accompanying zero fiscal note from committee with individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? Hearing none. So moved. The only other item that the committee had before it, thank you very much, Representative.
Good luck to hanging on the floor.
Was House Bill 353, the Condominium Association Audit Bill, and we are working with the prime sponsor of that measure and intend to bring it back to the committee. We're going to carry it over. So that concludes the work of the committee in today's setting. It is now 4:27, and Labor and Commerce are adjourned.